This is Beyond Busy. I'm Graham Alcott. I'm the author of a number of books, including the global bestseller How to Be a Productivity Ninja, and I'm the founder of Think Productive. We work with some of the world's leading companies to help people get stuff done, but more importantly, to help people to make space for what matters. Beyond Busy is where I explore the often messy truths and contradictory relationships around topics like work-life balance, happiness and success, and explore with interesting people what makes them tick. In short, this is where we ask the bigger questions about work. My guest today is Reverend Chris Lee. Chris is the author of the book The OMG Effect, 60-Second Sermons to Live a Fuller Life. In this episode, we talk about him starting his 60-Second Sermons on Instagram and growing it into the huge following that he has today. And we also talk about owning your identity and what it takes to live a fuller and more productive life. And we also talk about dealing with difficult people and how it's important to have a tough skin and a soft heart. This is Chris Lee. So I'm with, do I call you Chris or Rev Chris or how do you like to be called?
Father Chris, no, Chris is fine. Chris is fine. It's the first question. Everyone gets a little bit intimidated. They're like, Reverend Christopher or Father Chris or what? And I'm like, just call me Chris.
But then part of the reason we're talking is that you have this sort of persona, I guess, on Instagram of Rev Chris, right?
Yeah, Rev Chris 7. Yeah.
And your 60-second sermons. And we're here to talk about your book, The OMG Effect, which is right here.
You've got one. I've got one.
You got a copy there. Which I really enjoyed. And so the subtitle of the book is 60-Second Sermons to Help You Live a Fuller Life, which feels like it fits in really well with the topic of this podcast. So welcome to Beyond Busy, first of all.
Thank you very much.
What have you been doing so far with your morning?
Like what have I been doing this morning? Oh, well, getting up with the girls. I've got two girls. So not a bad wake up, 6:30 wake up.
Okay.
With my daughters, prepping them for school and then emails. And then I had a Zoom call with a new member of the church, or at least it's a funny situation that we find ourselves in because we're on Zoom at church.
Right. And okay.
It's been a lady who's been attending for about 3 months, our church service. And she's never turned her camera on and she's new. So she just wanted to talk to me. I open up what I call like the vicar surgery on Wednesday.
Okay.
So I allow people to come and chat with me and share or talk or whatever if I'm available.
So is that in normal times, that's tea with vicar at your house? Is that?
Yeah, or walks or, you know, pastoral chats or whatever. Yeah. On lockdown, it's Zoom anyway. So this lady who I've never met has been coming to our church for 3 months, and so I was just talking to her about, you know, she was asking me stuff about our church and about Anglicanism because she's American and she found me through online stuff.
Okay.
And then has been coming but wanted to know about the ins and outs of what it means to be an Anglican and if that's how she sees herself now, she's been attending our church. So just getting to know her a little bit and inform her a little bit about church and stuff.
Yeah. And I know very little about that stuff. My parents growing up were like involved in like evangelical churches, but if you're an American, Anglicanism versus what would they, what's their sort of version of that?
There's the Episcopalians out there and there is the Anglican Church in kind of out there, but it's more, you know, I suppose Anglicanism from would be seen as from a non-denominational background would be seen as quite a structured and authoritative kind of more similar to maybe a Catholic understanding. But it's so broad. I mean, it's so broad. You can look exactly like Catholic on one end and then the far extreme of Anglicanism, you can look like, you know, any Pentecostal or a Baptist or, you know, we're so broad. So,
you're sort of straddling these two things. So you do, as you were talking there, have a congregation and you're a real life vicar. And then you have this online world of Instagram with 170,000 followers and your 60-second sermons, which I just watched a few this morning, actually, and really enjoyed.
Cool. What was the, presumably you started as just a vicar with a congregation and then the Instagram thing developed after that. So just tell us about the history of how that developed.
Well, I mean, gosh, it's kind of, you know, where do you start with these things? But I suppose trying to give you a more concise version is when I became a vicar here, I moved to this church and it was kind of a small church, quite struggling. And they had about 12 people. And
you're in West London, right?
West London, yeah. We're kind of on the border of Shepherd's Bush and Chiswick.
Okay.
So I came here and I asked my brother-in-law, who's married to my wife's sister. So my wife's sister and her husband, we asked them, do you want to come live with us? Do you want to come and live with us and help us in this church? They said yes. They came and lived with us. He was a YouTuber, set up a YouTube channel, very successful YouTube channel called Korean Englishman and Jolly. Anyway, they asked me to come on their YouTube. And so I came on their YouTube, and then over a period of time, I became a popular guest. And I would talk about stuff online. I would come on in my collar. It started out as a YouTube channel based in Korea, South Korea, where they would try Korean culture and food and stuff like that and get their friends to try it, and we'd comment on it. So I did that and I became a popular guest. And then they started a new YouTube channel called Jolly, and they asked me to come on and do kind of cultural reviews on things. Like I reviewed music videos, so things like Billie Eilish and Ariana Grande and BTS and all these kind of, you know, young people's cultural stuff that's going on in the world. And as a priest, come on and talk about it. And what do I think? And anyway, those things went viral and they went really big. And, you know, now we've got about 350, 400 million views on the videos that I've been on with them. And that led to a load of people moving towards my Instagram, finding me on Instagram. And then that led to me having the opportunity to have a platform in which I can talk about and encourage people in life and in an outlook on life and stuff like that. And that then made me go, well, I've got this opportunity. What am I going to do with it? And so I started this thing called 60 Second Sermons. And then the 60 Second Sermons just hit a note with a lot of people. And suddenly it had its own growth and momentum. And I got kind of weirdly national coverage and press. Yeah. I've been on Good Morning Britain and This Morning a couple of times, and I'm their local vicar. And
I just saw are you doing Songs of Praise soon, or has that just happened?
I just did Songs of Praise. That was quite fun actually. And I was on that with Katie Piper so this kind of weird new ministry came along and landed in my lap, and suddenly I was, you know, being talked about as the internet's priest and the viral vicar. And it's all a bit weird because I'm like West London small church and suddenly quite known around the world on the internet. So,
There was a couple of passages from the book. I just realized I said passages, which I've never said to anyone before. And that's because I'm obviously talking to someone who reads the Bible a lot. there was a bit in the book where it really hit the nail on the head around that, where you say, you're talking about humble confidence, which I want to come back to. But there's this little line in there where you say you really admire people who don't actively seek the spotlight, but you're comfortable when you find yourself in the spotlight. So is that something that you would reflect on as your own experience?
Yeah, I mean, I try. I mean, I think a huge struggle for us all is ego. And I think, you know, it's a disease for humanity, unfortunately, is our ego and satisfying our urges of ego and self. The humble confidence thing comes through really this underlying theme I have for how I see life in a way is, you know, what getting on to success, like what is success? What does it look like to be successful? What does it look like to live this fuller life? And I think ultimately, if you were to define it in a word, I would say humility. That if you can hold humility in massive success or massive loss or whatever, if you can be humble, I think that you live a much more fulfilled life. And the way I kind of talked about that in the book is humble confidence, to because to be humble isn't to, you know, I think C.S. Lewis said something, to be humble is not to think less of yourself, but to think of yourself less.
Yeah.
And the idea to be confident and at peace with who you are, no matter what the situation, I think that's a very powerful thing and a unique thing and something that I gravitate as a person towards people who hold that. And it's rare in this world. We either overcompensate or we undersell ourselves. We're insecure or we're arrogant, you know, and all those things feed into each other. But if you can hold a level of humility, I think humility is the mother of all other gifts. Ego and pride are the opposite of that.
Yeah.
So we're like 10 minutes
in on Beyond Busy. We've covered success, ego and pride and humility already. So we're in good territory here.
Yeah, sure. Well, we can keep going on to those things. More probably to say, but.
For sure. Well, let's talk about Instagram then. So 170,000 followers. And one of the things that you say in the book is the main sickness of our day is identity.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that. What do you mean by that, first of all?
Gosh, I think the question of humanity, I mean, to go big, you know, why not go big, is who am I?
Yeah.
And in that, I'm a priest, right? Hello. And I believe that that is informed by God and the divine. And so I think, you know, I'm also a Franciscan. And so what that looks like is there's a guy called St. Francis of Assisi, and he was this amazing, amazing man who kind of led in a sense, a church revolution to the teachings of Jesus. And in a time where the church was seen as this big fat cat and power, he went, well, this isn't the way that I think we should live life. It's more humility, loving the poor and service. And he had this prayer, which was, Lord, teach me who I am and teach me who you are. And I think in a sense, that's almost like a perfect prayer. I see our lives and I see the world and I see certainly a new generation, a younger generation, just struggling with this question, who am I? Like, where do I find my identity? And the world at the moment loves to shove down your throat what it thinks you should think about yourself. So, you know, social media, the pains and the struggles of social media are the fact that it almost loves to feed this sense of, oh, you are successful because you've got X amount of likes, or you're not successful because you only have this amount of likes. And we allow ourselves to be fed by this, you know, this understanding of being popular or not, or being seen to have money or being seen to be like a bit of a playboy with all the women and, you know, money, sex, power. These are the things that it's like, this is what makes you who you are. And I think that is not the case. You know, our identity, I see ultimately, is a gift from God who says you are loved. And ultimately, my whole being is about trying to communicate to people who would listen that they are loved, that their identity is not based on what they do or what other people say about them or what they own. It's about the fact that they've been created by a God who loves them and who says they are of value. And that cuts through all the crap because it just says it's almost outside of yourself. You cannot do anything to it. You are loved, full stop. And if you can just accept that sense of love, which actually takes a great deal of humility, to be able to accept that you are loved, not because of anything you've done or haven't done, but just because you are being created, it actually flattens you because you're like, I can't fight. If you can get to a place where you can just accept that, it's very powerful. But you know, it's like almost, I'm thinking images often and my brain works in a weird way. So like, I feel like it's like standing under a waterfall. You cannot fight it. You can punch the water and try and push the water, but ultimately if you're under a waterfall, you're just going to get drenched.
Yeah.
If people could just be drenched and just be like, okay, and feel that sense of the love of God that says you are loved and you're of value, start from that point, then I think life would be so much better. And I think ultimately that's where the church is kind of, you know, I love the church, but there's been a lot of failure. And we've missed Genesis 1. So in Genesis 1, God says, he created the world and he created humanity, you know, men and women. And he said, you are very good. And like, if we could start there, but often what we jump to as Christians, we jump to Genesis 3. And in Genesis 3, we have the fall where, you know, the story of the serpent and Adam and Eve take the apple and they fall. And then, you know, in a sense, corruption, sin, selfishness enters the world. And sometimes the church has done and often is seen and you know, the media portrays us as a judgment force. You know, we're the people that says you're bad and you're a sinner and da 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 da. And we drill home this message that you're all rotten. When actually the start of the Bible is you are loved, you are good. And we need to get back to that. And once we're there, then everything it lines up so much better and we can feel more at peace. We can be less judgmental. We can show grace to ourselves, grace to others. We can be embedded from a place of humility that says, actually, it is dependent on who I am told I am by the one who created me. And that gives me freedom to accept that and also gives me freedom to accept the other person around me much more, you know. No, love God, love your neighbor. That's the teaching, right?
Yeah.
And if we start from that place, we could be better.
Yeah, for sure. And it feels like there's something in that. So even as, you know, I'm an atheist, but I take that message as like, you know, we should all start from this place of radical self-acceptance. And by doing that, we open ourselves much more up to, I guess, the opportunity to be able to help other people, be of service, be useful, like all these other things that, you know, really are like turbocharged when we understand who we are.
Yeah. And it's not that I'm saying like we're all perfect. Do you know what I mean? It's the ability to accept your brokenness, your foolishness, your silliness, all of the stuff that we all struggle with and still say amongst all of this, but I'm deeply loved.
Yeah. And I love that because you say that at the beginning of the book as well, like I'm flawed, I screw up and all these things, don't look at me as perfect.
Yeah.
And so like with contrasting that with Instagram then, right, which is a platform that, you know, drives home perfection. It drives home an infinite set of wants, a sense, you know, a kind of deep sense of you're not quite enough. You need to do more, be more, all this kind of stuff. So do you sometimes feel like there's too much of a contrast between what you're trying to say and the medium and the platform in which you're trying to say it? Is that ever an uncomfortable thing for you?
Yeah. I mean, if it wasn't, it would be worrying, I suppose.
That's true. probably a silly question.
No. It's a good question because it's really hard. It's like, it's kind of like going out into the night to bring people back into the day. But you kind of have to do that. You like, I want to use the platforms in which people are in to communicate to them that they're loved and precious. And I'd rather do that than not. And, the church is missional because it believes it has this treasure and, you know, our joy is complete when others share in that treasure. And it's not, it can come across arrogant in our worldview because we don't like to get on the idea that, oh, I'm right and you're wrong and stuff like that. But I don't know. I think like everyone is on social media, right? It's the average, I've heard two studies. I heard one study said that the average online social media is 4 hours a day. And then I heard yesterday that someone said it was 7 hours.
Wow. And really?
A day. And I was like, what? Wow. And on my screen time on my phone, it's pretty bad. But I tell myself it's okay because I do emails and WhatsApp and everything else on my phone. But my screen time is like 6 hours, you know, at least. So I want to get onto the places where the people are.
Yeah.
And I want to then use that as best I can to send a message of positivity, of love. And, I try with my Instagram to keep my ego out of it. And I'm a human. I'm You know, I struggle. I'm not like sitting on cloud nine floating around telling everyone, you know, what to do or anything like that. I know that I'm flawed. I've got a good community around me. I've got a good wife who's grounded, who tell me if I'm being stupid and foolish and posting a glorifying selfie of myself or something.
Right. Okay.
She'll pull me up on it. But
I was going to ask actually, like, is there things that you do or certain behaviors where you notice the ego and you have to check yourself, but it sounds like you've got a good, good accountability partner in your wife there.
Yeah. I mean, I think accountability and community is hugely important. I talk about that in the book, but, yeah. So basically I just think that I want to be in the platforms where everyone is.
Yeah.
And I know that social media is in itself a beast. It's not just a neutral tool. It's an economic tool, you know, and there are a lot of dangers to social media and the addictive tendencies that you can get from it. And there is problems there. But I also know that the church is starving for young people, and where the young people are is they're online. So I want to go there and say, hey guys, and point away from myself as much as I can and say, you know, you are beautiful. You are loved. You are precious. God is good. And he loves you and he's for you. Most people's Instagram in a sense point to themselves and look at my life and look how good it is and blah, blah, blah. And I try on the whole to point away and say, you know, point back to the person watching me. And a friend of mine was like, my Instagram is full of, you know, bums and boobs, and then I come across your Instagram and it's like, oh, okay, yeah, that's nice. And then he goes back, so probably. But I don't know.
There's also one of your quotes in the book is something like, he's the only priest that I can stand, or something like that, which I just thought was really funny as well.
Yeah, well, people say that. The comments on my Instagram and the YouTube and stuff are always like, I'm not religious, but...
Yeah, yeah. And do you mind that? Like, so it feels like there's people who... are consciously going to take some of the messages, but they know that it's not going to convert them. So do you see that as you've still helped those people, or do you still see, okay, I've still got work to do because my job here is to try and prophetize and convert people?
I don't know. I don't know if I see myself as that's my job, you know. I think like I believe in God, and I believe it's his work. I believe it's his responsibility through the work of the Spirit to bring people to himself. It's not mine. It's mine to, as much as I can, communicate and encourage people to open themselves up to receiving
him
in a way. But it's not my job to make them receive. And it's, I'm not trying to build up my Jesus bank account with like the amount of souls that I've saved. I think that, but I believe that there is truth in this, and you know, in John, who was one of the disciples, he wrote that our joy is complete when we share this. Because you know, everyone knows that, you know, if you're watching a film and it's amazing, you much prefer to be with a mate or a friend watching it together. And if something happens, you want to go and tell someone, this is, and that's where your joy is complete, because isolated by ourselves, you know, we're made for a relationship as humans, and it's, we get more joy when we share a treasure with someone else.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, so in a way, maybe there's a selfish reason, but I'm trying to share that joy, but I don't know. I it's part of who I am. I'm made up this way, I think. So
yeah, that's cool. I suppose one way you could look at the Bible is it's like one of the original self-help books, right? Like, so whether you believe in the God part or not, there's so many just really, you know, common sense, philosophical, wise lessons in it.
Yeah. I mean, there's some really tricky stuff as well.
There's some weird stuff.
It's like, oh my God, how do I compute this, God? I mean, if you want to be confused in your faith, just read the Bible. You know, it's tough. But I think like general wisdom is there for everyone. If it's true wisdom, it there isn't a, in a sense, my understanding of, you know, humanity is that it's not like the Christians own this like place of, you know, a monopoly on truth. It's that there is, God is breathing humanity. He cares about humanity, you know, and all of us. And I suppose a good theology is a good anthropology. It's a good understanding of humans and where we all come from. And so if there's wisdom, there's truth. And my understanding would be if there's wisdom, if there's truth, then it's Christ. And it doesn't necessarily need to be named as Christ. But and someone might feel insulted that I would call it Christ. But hard truth, that's what I believe. So I think you can find truth in other faiths, and I think you can find truth in outside of the church. But when I
because you've got like bits in your book where you talk about Socrates, you also there's also Roger Federer and lots of other people.
Yeah, I mean,
name dropped in
who
there
doesn't
as well,
like so, Roger Federer. If you don't like Roger Federer, it's your problem, basically.
Yeah, no, I'm totally a fan. I'm totally with you there. And you've got more followers on Instagram than the Archbishop of Canterbury and the Church of England combined, right?
People love saying that quote. I get that every time.
It's because it's in your press release, right?
Yeah, I know. I mean, Penguin. Penguin.
Yeah. But the thing about that is, so I'm interested in what has been your relationship with the established church and the kind of establishment parts of the church. Are you helping them to get more engaged online? Do they see you as a threat? Are you kind of like their biggest ambassador? Like what's the relationship there?
Oh gosh, maybe you should ask them. I mean I hope I hope they see me as an asset. And
are they not emailing you saying how do we get the same number of views as you? And
I mean, later on I'm doing a conference today at 3 o'clock where I'm talking about these kind of things. And I have been asked to speak at different events, and I've offered my advice to the digital team of the Church of England and stuff like that. But one of the good things about the church, I suppose, is it doesn't just knee-jerk react to success. There's a process, there's a discernment. And I think if they just flung open the doors and went, hey, come on, you like lead everything, I think I would be worried.
Yeah,
because,
true.
You know, it's not just about perceived success. It's more of a long obedience in the same direction, you know, rather than a quick poof. But at the same time, I hope that I can help, and I think the church sees me as a positive thing. I'm you know, going on TV and becoming a younger face.
Yeah,
I think, you know, the church can sometimes be perceived as a bit old, a bit distant, and a little bit judgmental. And sometimes we haven't done ourselves favors as the church with that, but sometimes that's just the image that the media love to portray of us, and it's not necessarily fair.
Okay.
But I love the goodness of the church when it's good. It frustrates me obviously when it's not. So
yeah, for sure. Which I suppose is also because I've got a friend in the States who has a very similar view. So he and I was actually I'm going to share with him your thing about St. Francis of Assisi, because he is someone who's very sort of anti the establishment of the church in the US, but is. I mean, I think of him as just one of the most purpose-driven spiritual people that I know. And I almost think of him as being someone who literally with every fiber of his being and every thought is thinking, what would Jesus do in this situation? Like he's, you know, really conscious of having that very humble approach and kind of taking those lessons and stuff. So, yeah,
quite an intense character.
He's very respectful. We have really lovely conversations about it because he's very respectful of my atheism, and I'm very respectful of his faith, and like we have these lovely dialogues about it, which I really value. I'll put a link in the show notes because he was actually on Beyond Busy before. He's called Derek Snook. And he actually wrote a book which I'll send you a copy, Chris. He wrote this book about his time living in a homelessness hostel in the States, in Charleston, wow. South Carolina, to understand the issues that were going on there, and basically set up like a sort of employment agency to help people back into work, sort of off the back of that and stuff. But he's just a hugely inspiring guy anyway. It definitely has that sort of humble confidence that you were talking about before as well.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you can have the biggest church in the world or the most authority or whatever. If you're not caring for the oppressed, the outcast, the orphan, if you're not involved in some way in helping and loving the people who make other people uncomfortable and are hard to deal with and are a little bit on the outskirts, and really you're economically bust spiritually, in my opinion. Like the whole point of Jesus is including the outcast and saying that they, and that's because, like, coming back to my identity, is because the identity of every single person is that they are loved. They've just probably forgotten it, never been told it, been injured through it. And, you know, I see our role as the church is to teach people that. It's like, it's why it's called the gospel. Gospel means good news. And the good news is you're loved and you're forgiven. Anyway.
Cool. I'm going to switch gears a little bit and ask you about productivity.
Oh, right. Okay.
So I've got a slightly cheeky question to start with on this is, how do you think God would judge productivity?
Right. Okay. Well, I mean, Jesus talked about this in terms of a parable of the talents, right? And it's quite of a difficult one. Is, you know, he says that there are these three people, and one was given 10 silver coins, and one was given 5 silver coins, and one was given 2 silver coins or something. And, you know, the one with 10 invested it and built it up and made reaped a harvest, and the father goes, well, good and faithful servant, well done. The one with 5, you know, doubled it and did well again. He was told, well done. And the one with 2 buried it because he was afraid. Basically, he was afraid whether losing it or whatever it was. But, you know, he gets told by the master, you're foolish. You should have at least invested it. You should have done something with it. But because you've done nothing with it, then what you have will be taken from you and given to the wealthy one. And it's kind of a tough teaching. It's kind of like there is an expectation that we are gifted with talents and gifts. And there is, in a sense, you know, we have the opportunity and means to increase those things. But having said that, I think the main thing that I see is productivity is personal, in a way, personal growth. Scripture says, you know, a tree by its fruit. So what is the fruit of someone's life? And is it good works? Is it good character? Love, joy, humility, patience, kindness, all of these. Do you see those things in someone's life? And if you see them, then that person's life will be fruitful. Now, ultimately, you can there are some pretty dark and evil people who are in power, positions of power. I mean, look at America. But that doesn't mean that they are So I've kind of lost what I was saying there a little bit, but
so let's bring it back to the parable there. So do you feel like you have a bunch of skills and talents and assets in terms of time and energy and all these things? And do you feel like it's your duty to use those well?
Yeah, I think so. Duty is a hard word, isn't it? It's like, I think it's my right, my privilege.
Yeah.
And based on my faith and understanding of who the character of God is, I want to lean into the gifts that I've been given and trust him. So I want to do that. I am excited by people who are successful in terms of how the world sees, like financially, someone who's built up a business. We all have friends probably who are successful, and it's interesting to be around them. You're like, wow, okay, what have you done here and how have you done that? It's interesting and exciting to hear how they've made a success of what they've been given. And then you've maybe got those friends or relations who it seems don't, and they just sit back and they become in a sense, victim of environment. And they are, again, I mean, priests, I'll use scriptural language. They talk about a reed blowing in the wind and the idea that the wind just blows them wherever. And they are, you know, always going, always being blown around. So I think there is an excitement to life that can lead us to, you know, travel or experience life or grow things and be productive. And I think that's a real gift of humanity. And I think one of the things about being human is one of, you know, when it says that we're made in his image, it's creativity is who God is. He's creative. And as humans, one of the defining aspects of being a human more than animals is our ability to create endlessly, you know, and to recognize beauty and to go, this is beautiful. And I want to create that, whether that's art or even a good business financial structure that helps and lifts up employees as well as, you know, the world. Or I think there is beauty to be had in productivity. So, I think when, you know, what, you know, going back to God wants us to be productive. He's literally said that. You like go out and produce and take care of the world.
Right. And be creative and be generous with that.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. So, I think that we should be.
And there's a thing in the book that sort of hinted at your own style around sort of personal productivity. So you said that you ask yourself two questions at the end of the year.
Oh, yeah.
And one is, what's the most exciting thing or the most exciting situation or person that I've been involved with that year? And then what's been the most successful thing? So just wondering, like, where did you come up with those questions and what do they mean? What's behind those questions for you?
Well, first I would say I didn't come up with them. I was on a retreat and someone said them to me and I was like, that's good.
Okay, cool.
It blessed me. And I think, you know, any wisdom is borrowed wisdom. Wisdom is there for all people. And so, like I said, there's nothing new under the sun. I'm not coming out with anything new.
How many years have you been doing those questions?
Just about three years. Okay. So, but yeah, I found it really powerful when this person said it. It was like, well, you know, looking back on this year, like reflection is a big thing in spirituality, like to be a reflective person, to sit in stillness and reflect. I think it's a very powerful thing. It's a gift to us as humans to do it. So I think like being able to say to yourself, well, this last year, taking a moment and pausing, what has given me life? What has been the thing that I've like really been blessed through? And just sitting with that and then, you know, what has been the thing that I've done that has seen life being produced either in a ministry or anything like that. And saying, okay, well, with those two things, do they link? Are they linked or are they not linked? And then asking, well, how do I see more of that? How do I see, you know, and I think in a way it's kind of what Steve Jobs did with Apple. He kind of went into Apple and went, where is life here?
Yeah, right. And, what's the fuse that I can just light up and it will...
What is the thing that is actually producing success and life? And then he was quite brutal in his cutting of everything else.
Yeah.
And he just went, this is what we're going to do. And I think, you know, that's it really. It's about recognizing where life is and then sowing into that and serving that.
That's nice. Yeah. One of the other topics that we talk about a lot on this podcast is work-life balance.
Yeah.
And we kind of started this conversation with you saying, hey, if the doorbell goes, like, I'm a priest, that's kind of an occupational hazard, that's what happens. So how do you switch off and how do you sort of manage that boundary, the sort of, I guess it's a very blurred boundary for you between what's the persona of you that's available to everybody else and the part of you that's available to everybody else versus the part of you that's private and for you.
I think coming back to that word humility, staying humble with an understanding that I am not the Messiah, right? I am not the savior. So on a day off, I brutally will protect it. And if someone needs me, you know, I'm still going to be okay. As to a degree, you know, if something absolutely tragic has happened, I'll be there. But ultimately, knowing that I'm not the Messiah, I don't need to do this, right? And they actually will be okay, or this situation will be okay without me. Like, so just staying humble with that, and knowing that my calling first is not to my job or anything else, but is to my wife and to my family, like. How ironic.
There we go. Do you need to get that?
Yeah, we didn't plan that. I'm sure my wife will get and get that.
Is that God calling, do you think?
Yeah, I know. That's so funny. He's got a sense of humor, doesn't he? So first and foremost is staying, you know, staying humble and going, actually, I need this. I need this for them. They need this for me. I need this for myself. Yeah. And I am more than what I do. So, you know, I talk about calling in the book a lot and where you find your calling and what your calling is and how to discover it and all of those things. But, you know, essentially at the very end of the chapter, I focus on the truth that you are more than your calling. You are more than what you're, you know, set in here to do. And that obviously feeds back into this line of my whole kind of being, which is identity is from God and says you're loved. Yeah. So you are more than what you do or what you want to do. And so being human and being present is an important thing. And the best me for my people, or my service or my church or whatever it is a full filled up me. So it's actually really valuable that I have downtime. It's actually good for my, you know, business, my ministry, that I am relaxed, that I am filled up, that I am happy, because that will produce a productivity, you know, in my life. And in essence, that is what the Sabbath is biblically. It's about just going, you need to take a break. And actually taking a break is about being still, being present, and allowing yourself to be fed again between you and God alone. And that will lead you to a fuller, more productive life in the rest of the week. So take a break. So yeah, I you should definitely take a break. And I am pretty good at that. Like I will plan holidays. I will, you know, I'm not someone who gets beat up by guilt too much. And it's just a waste of emotion. So I'm just like, no, I'm going to take a break.
Right. Yeah, I'm pretty good at evenings and weekends and protecting those boundaries. But then I do see it in a lot of people who are struggling to take that Sabbath, right? And to really treat Saturday and Sunday as any different from a Monday to Friday.
And it's quite popular at the moment to be like the person who's like, you got to work, man. You got to work, work. And you got to push. And that's how you make it in life. And it's just like, whoa, I actually I don't think that's healthy.
I completely agree. It's that very sort of toxic hustle culture. I sometimes for fun on Instagram, back to Instagram, I'll follow like some of those sort of entrepreneur business type accounts. And man, some of the stuff that is being like sort of pushed on young people as here is how to succeed, I think is actually dangerous. I would go that far. I'd say it's dangerous, you know.
Yeah. And here is like my perceived wisdom. This is how it's like, oh, shut up. No, it's not.
For sure.
You know, so much of life is, you know, stumbling into something luckily, and often that comes through having a stillness and a place that just you know, you just fall into something. Like my success wasn't planned. You know, I think there's a lot of that goes on, and this idea that we're just all in charge of our own you know, I just humble yourself. No, you're not.
I also love the idea that so you just went on YouTube because, you know, your in-laws asked you to, kind of thing. And so almost like there's something really beautiful about that sort of success for you happening by accident. You know, it's just and I think sometimes
they asked me to eat chicken. Yeah, so he literally it's like here's he gave me a beer and a piece of chicken.
Yeah.
And I tried it. And that was in a sense the start. That video has got like 18, 19 million views. Like me eating some chicken. And you know, subsequently that's led to, you know, all of this.
But then if someone else listening to this said, right, I'm going to do a video of me eating chicken, it would get like 10 views. So it's
right. Right. You know, there is a mystery. There is a mystery in the world. And I think that's great.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's beautiful. And I do think you should work. And I think that, you know, there is a place for that, but there is also a place to remember you're human and you're more than your work. And you're more than, you know, what success is defined as. Mm. You know, it's so amazing to just, and I think COVID as well is is helping people to be more present. I mean, it's a hard situation, but you know, there are some things that we can learn from this time. And I think one of them is being reminded of our fragility, our humanity. Our empathy for most part is being increased because we're suffering and we acknowledge the suffering of others when it's closer to us in a way. And I think we're being reminded to pause and to take stock and to see what the value is, like friendships, relationship, family. These things are so vital. And the idols of the world of money, power, and sex are being a bit shaken because everything's slowed.
And economic consumption as well, right? I mean, the title of this podcast is Beyond Busy.
Yeah.
And I feel like busyness is a really good mask and a good hiding place away from what you were just talking about there, fragility, our own mortality, you know. And so having all of that stuff stripped away, you know, the travel, the entertainment, the consumption, all that stuff, it's like we are, you know, faced with who we are much more, much more readily, I guess.
Mm. Yeah. Who am I? Who are you?
Yeah, for sure. there's a couple of other lines I wanted to touch about from the book, which I really loved. You talk about dealing with difficult people. Okay. And you say you try to deal with difficult people with a hard skin and a soft heart.
Mm.
Just really resonated with me. So tell us more about that.
I think I'm sure we've all had it. You know, people who say something to you, you're like, oh, you're injured and you're angry and you're like, oh, and you know, they get to you in a way that is more powerful than what they've said. And you're like, you don't know why. And it's really just tiring and exhausting to be around those kind of people. So I try to remember to be like, my heart towards someone isn't defensive or angry. I try and remember, again, coming back to this, that they are loved, even if they don't know it, even if they are, you know, this bully. But I try to remember the core, the deepest them is love. The deepest them is good. And they've just either forgotten it along the way or it's been, you know, beaten out of them in some way. But I try and keep a soft heart. So my heart is in the right place with people. But then the first line of defense is the skin, right? Don't let anything get into my, you know, to get through into my heart. So just try and just to have the acknowledgement that the first layer is often superficial from people. So they're going to be angry, defensive or whatever. And just it's looking at people with an attitude that is a right attitude so that they don't have dominance over you.
Yeah.
And, that's a struggle. I mean, I don't always get it right. I still, you know, there's people who make me feel more insecure than others. And that speaks to my own insecurities. Like, and I'm like, oh, why do I feel like that with that person? And why do I feel a pang of jealousy? And just being aware of what's going on in myself is an important thing. But I think if you can have, you know, a soft heart and a hard skin rather than a hard heart and you're just angry and you're just like, you know, the defensiveness that leads to, oh, well, they're just an idiot, you know? And that is that hard heart where you just like, oh, you know, I'm not going to let their words in because they're an idiot and they're this and they're that. When actually the soft heart says, actually, they are loved, but my skin says, don't let that come through. You know, it's much more gentle and from a place of confidence and security rather than a defensive place of having to like walls up against everyone.
Yeah, but I love that.
Roots down and secure, then walls up.
Yeah, I love that. And it brings us, I guess, back to that thing of stillness and presence and reflection. Like if you have those kind of qualities in you, it's much easier to, you know, to treat people in that way and to think about people in that way, I guess.
Yeah.
A couple of final things then. So
no worries.
We talked about productivity earlier, and one of the lines in your book is the single-minded pursuit of economic growth has left the world in bad shape, which jumped off the page for me because I was like, yes, I totally agree with this, but I'd love to hear more about your take on that.
Oh, wow. I mean, it's kind of idol worship in a way. The idea that money is the thing that provides you with all everything else, like security and happiness and you know, peace. And it's just a lie. And sometimes our capitalist tendency is to drive for, you know, drive for just the pursuit of more for more sake, and we don't stop. And the world at the moment is, you know, our economic and our political and our environmental kind of problems going on in the world. It's all this drive nonstop for more, and without a sense of saying, well, is this right? You know, and I don't want to get too political, but, you know, you look at Trump, and he just, in a sense, epitomizes the weakness of the, of, you know, can we still refer to it as the West? But you know what I mean? Like the weaknesses of our, sometimes our culture, and certainly American culture, which is, you know, power and masculinity and money. And, you know, you just see it, and you're just like, ugh, I'm tired of that, you know? And, and it's, it costs us so much to not just, when we pursue endless capitalist growth for just its own sake.
Yeah.
And we think that it will be the thing that will drive us to greatness, when it's actually the very thing that is driving us to destruction. Yeah. And, you know, that narcissistic tendency for just me, myself, and I, and more is broken. But it doesn't have to be. And, you know, capitalism isn't evil. It, you know, the understanding of growth and prosperity is not a bad thing. But when it comes at the expense of everything else, that's when it's bad. When it doesn't take into consideration the way it injures, you know, developing world or the poor in our society, when it's just a selfish chase of a few at the top, that's when we're all damaged. So, I think, you know, you see prophetic voices in the world coming out against it now and again. And, you know, the rise of Greta Thunberg and, you know, the taking on the big power struggles and you know, it, you know, a kind of systemic racism, which like the Black Lives Matter movement. Well, these voices are raising up and saying, you know, enough. It's not okay, guys. And we need change. And that change will take time and it will be difficult. But we need change. So I think it's in a weird way it comes from an insecurity in each one of us that feels like at any moment it will be taken from us. It's like a child with a toy, you know, they do it as much, they play with it because they're like worried at some point parents going to take it or siblings going to take it. And actually, if everyone was just be like, it's yours, chill out, you just can't. Like, if everyone took a sense of ownership over the world in a way that was true rather than a selfish, it's mine, you know, in a way that it is yours. So deal with it well, you know, and if we could be better at that, we'd be a lot happier and a lot more understanding of each other, I think. But yeah, I think, I don't know, I'm just spouting now.
Yeah, no, that I think is just a really good summary, and yeah, completely agree with everything that you're saying there. And I do think there's some work to be done in challenging the idea that we should be measuring the success of things on the lines of economic growth. It feels to me like in business, that's just taken for granted that every company needs to grow. We need to grow, and, you know, putting certain percentage figures on it the whole time. And it's, you know, it's actually just not a good measure of success and it's certainly not a measure of happiness. And I think it feels still like a very fringe opinion to share that, but I think you know what gives me a little bit of hope is, as you're talking there about Greta Thunberg and Black Lives Matter, I don't think I'd really thought about it myself in that way before, but it feels like some of those voices are going to challenge that more and more. And I think, you know, as humanity, maybe we're on to something in terms of that becoming more of a mainstream view. I wanted to finish this thing a bit fun, which is the God Pod.
Oh, yeah.
So you may be a vicar, but you've got a good taste in music. So you've got Tribe Called Quest and The Who and Billie Eilish and loads of good stuff in there. And firstly, just explain what the God Pod is to start.
So it was a random idea that I had. I basically, you know, in the book, I've got, I think, 12 chapters. And for me, I see God in the world, our humanity, in our creativity, in our, and I put a lens on that doesn't just say, oh, God's in church. It says that God is everywhere. And my Franciscan kind of spirituality speaks to me in that God is in the world around us, in creation, in artistic form. Mm. And so when I listen to music or watch films, I often have a filter, or I'm open to the movement of God through those things. And so I get spoken to by secular film or, you know, by music powerfully, and I feel that's God moving me. So with that understanding, when I come into this book, I kind of was like, I said to Penguin, do you think that it would be okay to kind of produce like a playlist with a book? And they were like, what? And I was like, well, like a, like a, almost like a theme tune or something for the chapter. And they were like, oh, that's kind of interesting. And then I talked about it more and they were like, okay, yeah, we like the idea. So every chapter in the book has in a way like a theme tune that in some way has spoken to me or speaks to me about something to do with that chapter, or, yeah, you know, has spoken to me in a way that it feels quite akin to what I'm talking about in a weird way. And it's hard to articulate. I don't know. And you know, the way like sometimes pain can feel like a color. I don't know if I'm just being stupid, but you know, if you get whacked, it can feel like white.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Like there's a link in our beings that are, I feel is quite profound in a way that I can't articulate, but we're more than just our thinking brain. We're feeling, in our body is important to the way we understand everything as well. So music for me is a powerful embodiment of understanding in a way. And sometimes music and art speaks to me powerfully that makes sense that words don't necessarily articulate well. So I love music. I love film. I love listening to things and allowing it to speak to me. And so I thought, well, if I'm writing a book about self-help and stuff like that, well, why not put in music as well? And
so could people get that playlist on Spotify then?
Yeah, I did create it.
Yeah, cool.
I think it's called like the OMG Effect 60 Second Sermons or something.
Okay, cool. We'll put a link to it in the show notes. And one of the ones I didn't mention there is The Streets, which is just like one of my favorite albums of all time. You were in the video for A Week Become Heroes.
Yeah, I know, right? Classic. I met Mike.
How did that happen?
So when I was at university the first time around, where I was basically smoking a lot of weed and missing lectures before I, you know, came to the Lord, not that I'm judging the people that do that, but, you know, just in those days where I was chasing skirts and all that, I was going through a difficult time, but I was listening to a lot of music, different music. And, you know, one day this Mike Skinner was doing a music video in Kingston where I was studying, and I was walking down the street and someone stopped me and said, would you like to be in a music video? And I was like, let me see, you know, are you going to pay me? And they're like, yes. And I was like, okay, you know, I'm a student, what else do I have to do? So I went along and met Mike Skinner and shook his hand in a music video, and I was in the video for Weak Become Heroes, which is actually a really powerful song.
It's beautiful, that song. I love that song.
Yeah, yeah. My favorite is probably Turn the Page.
Yeah.
So good.
I went to uni in Birmingham, and I'm from the Midlands, and so that line where he's like, the hazy fog over the bull ring, the lazy ways the birds sing, I'm just... Every time it's just goosebumps when that comes on. But yeah, I just thought that was amazing that you were in a Streets video. That was just a really funny thing to read.
I actually DM'd him a while back and he responded on Instagram. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I went to, I'll tell you one very quick story, is I went to, they did their like reunion shows at Brixton Academy. I've never seen just so many people just utterly trashed at a gig before. It was just like, it was so different from any other gig. I go to a lot of gigs, but it was just a whole different sort of dynamic. That's kind of, you know, part of their bag, I guess. But it was an amazing gig. But there you go.
I think when he was younger, certainly, I don't listen to so much of his stuff, but when he was younger, I really felt it was quite a prophetic voice.
Yeah.
And for, you know, a generation, it felt for me as well, I felt like this is a voice of someone who's really articulating, able to pinpoint a lot of the way that culture is and what we see. And you know, that's what music does. It brings... It's in a way, it's a psychology in and of itself. It helps you understand yourself And it helped. And you know what is psychology? Basically, counseling is allowing the brain to untangle so you can understand a bit better. And music can do that, where you just understand, oh, yeah, that is what I think and feel and know in some part of me, but haven't been able to say it. And when you get people like, you know, someone like Mike Skinner or other amazing artists that are able to speak deeply into you, it's really helpful. And that's why I really like Billie Eilish now, because I think she's that voice for a lot of young people who are struggling with like mental health stuff. And she's able to articulate the darkness and the beauty of sometimes that darkness in a way that is quite powerful and profound.
So true. I need to let you go because you've got to get ready for your conference, helping the Church of England to work out what to do on social media. But I just want to say a huge thank you for being on Beyond Busy. It's just been a real pleasure. And do you want to let everyone know where they can get hold of you and follow you and get the book?
Yeah, so Instagram is RevChris7. On YouTube, you can just type in RevChris. And all videos of me will come up, or the videos that I'm usually on are with two channels. Called one is called Korean Englishman, and the other is called Jolly, J-O-L-L-Y. Cool. And then the book, OMG Effect, lovely orange. This orange is really nice.
Nice, orange.
Yeah, it's lovely. And you can get that basically most places, like, you know, Waterstones or Amazon or other book retailers are available. I did an audio version, which is if you can deal with me talking to you for a long time, did that, which is quite fun, a bit weird. You never know how bad at reading you are until you have to read on a microphone. Can't read.
So I've always avoided doing mine.
You've got your book, haven't you?
Yeah, I got someone else to read it because I couldn't face that.
Well, 2 days of non-stop reading. It's the most I've ever read in my life.
Well, it's been lovely chatting. We'll put links to all that in the show notes at getbeyondbusy.com. And thanks for being on Beyond Busy.
Hey, man. Thanks, Graham. Bless you.
So there you go. If you're listening to this because you're a fan of Reverend Chris and you do that primarily through Instagram, please add me on Instagram as well. It's at Graham Alcott. I would love to build up the kind of following that Chris has. He just has such a huge following on there and, doing really good work. It also helps that he's really happy just holding a camera and walking along and doing those sermons. I have tried that and I just feel like I just feel so self-conscious doing it. Oh, I just can't do it. So that's why a lot of my content is me interviewing other people and that kind of thing. I just find I can talk like this and I feel okay. And then as soon as I turn a camera on, I just get very, very self-conscious very quickly. So I avoid that one, but there you go. Thanks also to Riz, my producer on the show. And also want to say, if you're not signed up to my Sunday email, which is the nearest you get from me to a Sunday sermon, it's called Rev Up for the Week. And you can sign up there if you just go to grahamalcott.com. And as ever, all the links to previous episodes and the show notes for this one are all at getbeyondbusy.com. We'll be back next week with another episode. Until then, take care and bye for now.